as I thought. Okay, are you ready?
Good afternoon, everyone.
And welcome to this afternoon's meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Fritz. Hales.
Here. Welcome, everyone. We have a single item on the council calendar this afternoon. I'll get Carl to read it in a moment. Let me just lay down some ground rules for those of you who may be not regulars here in the council chambers. First of all, want to welcome everyone here. There are just some disclosure requirements we want to make sure you know. That is, if you're here as a citizen, all you need to do is give us your name. You don't need to give us your address. However, if you're here as a lobbyist, our city code requires that you disclose that at the start of your testimony. And if you're representing an organization as a volunteer leader, we'd appreciate knowing that as well. Because of the number of people that we have here, after our invited testimony, I'll be asking people to limit individual testimony to 2 minutes because, again, we want to make sure we have the opportunity for everyone to be heard. Please testify to the matter at hand. I don't think that'll be a big problem this afternoon because I think we all know this topic that we're here to discuss, but it's important that people stay on topic. And then also it's important that we respect each other because there are issues in our community, and this is likely one of them, where we don't all agree. And it's very important that we hear our fellow citizens courteously. So if you agree with someone and want to demonstrate that, give them a thumbs up or a wave of the hand, but we ask that we not make vocal demonstrations in favor or against our fellow citizens' point of view when we're in this chamber so we can hear everyone. If you have handouts, please give them to our council clerk, and she'll distribute them to the members of the council. And with that, would you please read the item?
Item 370. Accept private for hire transportation innovation task force preliminary report.
Okay, and I'll call on Commissioner Novick to get us started.
Colleagues and citizens, I'd like to start by thanking the mayor for transferring responsibility for private for hire regulation from the Revenue Bureau to PBOT last year, because the private for hire industry is part of the transportation system and should be recognized as such. I've been asked numerous times over the past year for my views on the regulation of the private for hire system, and I think my answers have been fairly consistent. I have said that I'm committed to the rule of law and to equal treatment under the law, but not particularly committed to maintaining the current set of rules and laws that govern this industry. Indeed, I think that in every aspect of government and every set of regulations, it's appropriate to periodically take a look at what you're doing and see if perhaps it should be changed, regardless of whether there are any fancy new companies with four-letter names entering that particular industry. So when we convened this august task force, and this is, I think, one of the more august task forces the city has ever seen, we gave them some broad parameters. We said that safety is paramount, and every driver has to be insured at all times, and vehicles have to be inspected, and background checks have to be conducted, no matter who you work for. And we made it clear that every company engaged in this industry would have to share the responsibility for accessible service for people with disabilities. So we gave the task force that charge. But beyond that, we basically said, you're really smart people. We'll give you a lot of resources and information. A lot of people will come in to brief you. We want to see what you come up with. So today, we're going to hear what they came up with. Chair Greenfield, welcome. Take it away.
Thank you. My name is Mike Greenfield. I'm the chair of the task force, and I'd like the task force members to rise and state your name. Introduce yourselves to the board.
Please.
Richard Lazar, representing the Technology Association of Oregon. Hi, Hannah Ansbury with the Portland Business Alliance.
And I'm Sue Stoll. I'm the commissioner on the Portland Commission on Disability.
I'm Casey John Hawkins, the Portland Coast
Dan Lenzen with Venture Hospitality and Real Estate.
Chris Bebo, representing the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association.
Joan Plank, retired from the Oregon Department of Transportation.
And not here today is Leslie Carlson, Joanne Harrigal, and Jewel Menarek.
And your facilitator.
And I'm Jim Owens, principal with Cogan Owens Green, and had the honor of being the facilitator for this August group.
I'd like to thank the board for this interesting assignment. The task force has been working at a fairly fast clip, given the timelines. We're recommending a 120-day interim pilot to accommodate the city's agreement. We will, following that, be back to recommend a regulatory framework informed by specific data, additional research, input and analysis, and, of course, policy direction from the City Commission.
A couple opening comments about the charge and the process. Commissioner Novick just ran through the charge that you gave us. As the chair has indicated, it was a broad charge that we've tried to address in a very aggressive period of time. I'm not going to read through this. I did want to speak to the process very quickly. It's been an expedited process. Since mid-January, we've had 10 meetings of the task force. We've had invited briefings from the taxi industry, from the TNC industry, and from technology platform companies. The Office of Human Rights, Equity and Human Rights helped organize a driver's forum. We had a community forum. My time's up.
Nope. Thanks very much.
Very succinct.
An important piece of the research that was done for us by PBOT was looking at other communities' approaches to transportation network company regulations. You may hear suggestions today that this hasn't been a transparent process. To the contrary, all of our meetings have been open to the public. All of our external communications, communications we receive from outside parties, and any communications from our members to the group at large have all been posted on the project website. And at each of our meetings, we had members publicly declare any contacts they had with members of the industry. So we've made every effort to have this as a transparent process. Early on, we adopted some principles to guide the work of the task force. Again, I'm not going to run through each of these. I think they're going to pop up as we go through our recommendations today. So at this point, I'm going to turn it back to the chair.
The scope of the recommendations that we're presenting today are intended only to provide a framework in a temporary manner for 120 days. Any and all recommendations may be revisited during the second phase with a more holistic review of the city's programs will occur. The framework of the recommendation is of 16 subject areas in phase one. Among areas that we'll be taking a close look at in phase two are performance measures, providing and funding accessible services, employment status of drivers, PFHT board, driver working conditions, monitoring programs, and programs staffing. Generally, the recommendations that we're giving you today break down into three categories. The first category is the application of existing regulations without any changes to them to each of the types of the taxis and the the networks. The second group, we've modified the regulations and applied them evenly to both groups of providers. And the third category are regulations that are different between the two categories of providers. I will review for you the first set, which are regulations which were in place when we started, are still in place, and apply to both TNCs and taxis. Driver conduct, non-discrimination, caps on hours, 14 hours of driving, enforcement, and prohibition of weapons in vehicles. To talk with you about the modified regulations, in other words, regulations which we've changed, which apply to both sets of providers. Joan will give you that.
Okay, the first area is vehicle inspections. We're going to include the current master certified mechanics who do the vehicle safety inspections on vehicles, but we're also going to allow expansion to something called Blue Seal certified shops. The expansion is based on staff conversations with the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, and it's intended to create more options for vehicle inspections. Blue Seal shops have to have at least 75% of their technical staff certified under either the ASE or the Master Mechanic program. We also looked at safety equipment as part of that area. Current city code currently requires a spare tire and a functional heating and cooling system. Again, staff talked with the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence and found that functional heating and cooling systems and first aid kits are critical safety features. Obviously, you got to be able to see out of the vehicle if it's fogged up, and also comfort for people in hot weather is important. Spare tires and fire extinguishers, however, which are part of the what current requirements, are not critical safety issues. So fire extinguishers are rarely used is what was found, and so we kept heating and cooling and first aid kits and said spare tires and fire extinguishers weren't required. We also recommended that vehicles under 1 year old be exempt from vehicle inspections. The next area is background checks. We decided to allow background checks to be performed by third parties that meet or exceed current city requirements. Today, the city does the background checks, and in order to keep the process moving, both taxis and TNCs will be able to use third parties. The taxi company or the TNC are going to have to certify to the completeness and accuracy of the records, and the city will have the authority and ability to audit those background checks and require the companies to maintain the records for audits.
So what third parties exist to do background checks?
Commissioner Fritz, there are companies who provide that service on a national basis. I understand that some of the TNCs are using those companies currently.
And they have access to driver's licenses?
They have access to the background information. I believe the city goes through the state-led system, law enforcement data system.
Well, I thought there's a regulation that says that people can't get other people's driver's license numbers except through that. So how are these companies able to get it?
Commissioner Fritz, I don't know the answer to that.
Thank you.
Okay. One other change in the background check area that we wanted to clarify is that the current code standards apply to felony convictions. Today, the word conviction is not in the code, and so we thought that that was a important thing to include. Driver testing and training. We want to authorize both taxis and taxi companies and TNCs to administer the training and testing programs that have been approved by the city as equivalent to the city's programs. Again, because we expect there to be an additional group of people who want to start providing service, this was a way to allow the process to move forward a little faster. There'll be a temporary driver permit during phase one that eases the administration of the training and testing, but there'll be a requirement that all training and testing be completed no more than 4 months from the issuance of a temporary permit. Permits is the next area. The task force recommends issuance of a 120-day interim permit for any new vehicle. We require that the companies guarantee that the drivers and vehicles meet the requirements for vehicle inspections, background checks, driver training, testing, and reporting. We recommend no restrictions on the number of permits during phase one. We also recommend during phase one that approval of new permits transfer to the commissioner in charge of PBOT instead of the Private for Hire Transportation Board. And finally, we'll, during phase two, assess market capacity and the data that we get to determine how it worked. Minimum standards of service. For both taxis and TNCs, we recommend the current standards that require 24/7 citywide service, but we recommend deletion of a requirement that no more than 65% of a company's fleet can be within a one-mile radius of the Portland International Airport, and remove the requirement for a minimum of 15 vehicles, and that at least two-thirds of the company's permitted fleet must be in service at all times. So we're keeping a couple of the standards and taking some away during this time. The final area that where we made changes is agent of service. and we recommend that both taxis and TNCs have a locally based agent of service with regular weekday business hours, and that they be accessible, and that would provide for any legal issues that that need to be addressed, and that there also be accessible service via telephone or email 24 hours a day to give people who are receiving service a place to call or file a complaint.
Richard and Rihanna will come up and continue the presentation.
Can I ask a question about one of your recommendations? Or do you want to run through them all first?
Your choice. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I'm a little puzzled about the statement, the policy statement of we want uniform citywide service, but we're suspending the requirement that no more than 65% of the fleet can be near the airport. I mean, that is the most lucrative fare in this city, or any city really, is that trip to the airport. And you're saying you're suspending the maximum on that. So how does that work to ensure citywide service as opposed to everybody being at the airport?
Commissioner Saltzman, the requirement is still there for citywide service, that we haven't taken that away. Right. And the TNCs are not at this point allowed to be at the airport on the property because the Port of Portland regulates that.
I mean, it's possible that you could still allow TNCs to be at the airport without suspending the requirement of no more than 65% of your fleet be at the airport. That's a question, I guess.
We'll know the answer to that question in some detail after the 120-day period. In some cases, what we're trying to do is to put into place some alternative service mechanisms and then get some feedback, and which will guide us for the final recommendations.
And with data to see whether or not, if everybody runs back to the airport and there's an issue with service in other parts of the city.
So at the end of the 120 days, you'll have the data to assess whether that cap on airport service is being counterproductive to the obligation of, or I should say lifting the cap for airport service is counter to the citywide service standard.
We hope so.
Yeah, we're going to be aggressively looking for data-based reasons that will sound much better when we present the second phase to you.
Okay.
Let me follow that question just a little bit further, and that is make sure I understand, and that is, aside for what we regulate or don't regulate in our city code, the airport has decisions to make about what they allow or don't allow. And is your understanding that they're not intending to allow TNCs to queue up with taxis and wait for fares?
Mayor Hales, we don't know, but under the current rules, the TNCs would not be able to do that.
Under our current rules?
Their current rules.
Okay.
They would be able to be in the cell phone waiting area.
Right.
They wouldn't be at taxi.
In theory.
I don't know if that's practice. Airport property or what the definitions there are either. So.
Okay. But there's a taxi cab waiting area at the airport. The TNC vehicles are at this point. You don't anticipate that the port is going to allow them to queue up. They haven't indicated.
We don't know.
Okay. Be a good thing for us to hear from the port on that subject.
Okay. Do we have a proposed mechanism? You said that the companies would verify that all the background checks and equipment and permits have been done. Do we have a proposed mechanism to check on that?
Commissioner Fritz, the staff will put some kind of process in place to make sure that the companies are certifying that all of this is in place. And, yes, I'm assuming that there will be a check to make sure that that has happened. The companies will be on point and responsible for making sure that all of that takes place.
So this conversation is very much analogous to a previous one that we had last summer over Airbnb, and we had an extended discussion over do we just trust or do we verify, and so I'm going to want some information on that. And just as before you continue with your presentation, as a framing, the council has not yet decided that we're going to allow this to move forward. So my understanding of what we're discussing today is, if it moves forward, what are the proposed regulations, and then what council might change in that proposal. But then next week will be the discussion about do we actually allow this to happen, or do we say let's do some more work first?
Yes, these are our recommendations.
To you, yes.
Can I follow follow up on that for a second, Eric, just while we're all on the same subject. And I want to just encourage everybody, if they can, to silence their cell phones, because my guess is we'll have a lot of interruptions. So when you say that the companies are going to have to certify, who are the companies we're talking about? Give me an example of both a taxi company and a TNC that would have to certify.
My understanding is that there will be a requirement for an individual at the company who can speak for the company and represent the company, be it Broadway Cab or Radio Cab or Lyft or Uber, that will be responsible for certifying and making sure that those background checks and other items have been properly taken care of. And I believe also that it's not going to be just trust. It's going to be trust and verify.
So let's take, since you mentioned Uber and Lyft. So each of those companies will have to have someone who says to the city, we certify that we're in compliance with all these things that we have to self-certify.
Yes.
And we'll have some mechanism for having them check the box and then and verify that.
And audit follow-up record, they'll be required to supply records, make records available right to the city.
So our recourse against a company that doesn't follow that rule is to fine them?
A condition of getting permitted by the city, she's gone over some of those areas. The record checks that are done are open for inspection and audit by the city. The alternative, if someone does not meet that, is something that needs to be determined by staff, but it would either be lifting the permit altogether or a fine or some consequence, and we can probably get into that level of detail in the second phase.
Well, that's to be determined, but there's some consequence for Absolutely. A failure to follow this rule, assuming we agree that self-certification is acceptable.
Well, my opinion would be that if they don't meet the qualifications, they don't qualify for the permit.
That would be the heaviest hammer we would have.
That would be my...
So let me take...
And there are penalties for driving without a permit.
Yeah. So let me take the example of one of the certification processes that goes to the heart of safety in the vehicle, and any one of the ones that you've identified. And it turns out that Lyft has not, in fact, certified, and there's, in fact, a bunch of cars out there that are not safe. Our recourse is to lift the permit or to fine them. What's the recourse for the passenger?
I don't know what the recourse for the passenger is today, but it would probably be similar to the processes in place today versus what we would propose.
File a complaint with the city taxi with the city private for hire staff. Right.
Okay. So one of the things I'm going to ask are the TNC folks, assuming they're testifying later, is their user agreement has a disclaimer of all liability. Mm-hmm. So they say they're specifically not liable for anything that happens with the driver. So I just want to be clear that we understand what the recourse is. The city can fine or take away a license. But at least under the user agreement that I've reviewed, the passenger has no recourse if it turns out he or she is in a vehicle that was not properly certified, and where either the background check wasn't done, it turns out the driver was a bad actor, or there was a safety violation. So at some point, I'm going to want to know what's the recourse for the passenger, because at the end of the day, the consumer, I think, is the most important person in this equation.
We may all already be doing this, and you may have done this in just that instance as well, Commissioner Fish, but we ought to be queuing up questions that we have, not just for the task force who've made these recommendations, but also for our private for hire staff in the Bureau to say, what do you think you have to do in terms of administrative rules to address this issue that's come up here in the hearing?
But just continuing on the background checks, are you envisioning that the TNCs would be required to list their drivers that they have certified and give us their driver's license information?
Yes.
So that's different from Airbnb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a nutshell, the permitting and the background checks are all predicated on certification by executives from the companies. So that there can be some legal liability here, that they've done the background checks, that they've done the vehicle inspections.
They will be giving us a list of their drivers.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. It's different because Airbnb houses aren't in the public right away.
Okay.
Thank you.
Keep going.
That's at least one of them, yeah.
Good afternoon.
Did we wear that panel out?
I hope, yeah, I scared him off.
Hope you didn't feel like we were disrespectful. We were just getting started.
Please.
Good afternoon. Richard Lazar, privileged to be here, Mr. Mayor. Councilors, appreciate the opportunity to serve on the task force. It has, to say the least, been a very interesting experience and continues to be, and appreciate that opportunity. At some point, I may be able to add some color on some of the questions you've already asked, but what I'm up here to talk about next are two categories. One is insurance, and the other is equity and inclusion or accessibility. So with regard to insurance, there are three categories that we're making recommendations around. Some are the same across the two sectors. Some are different. First, the same for both taxi companies and TNC companies. Commercial, we're recommending commercial business insurance, which is similar to the current requirement applicable to taxis, which is that they both carry general liability insurance with limits of at least $1 million per occurrence and $2 million in the aggregate for bodily injury, property damage, personal and accidental injury, and contractual liability. So that's sort of GL, as they say in the insurance world. Workers' comp is as required by state law. That's the current requirement for taxis. That would be applicable to TNCs as well. And then the other area that's come up and generated most discussion has to do with commercial vehicle insurance. And these recommendations vary between the two categories. So for taxis, we're recommending that the current requirement remains in place, which is that taxi companies carry commercial auto liability insurance with combined single limits of not less than $500,000 per occurrence for death, injury, or property damage. For TNCs, it's slightly different and with higher limits. And so what we're recommending is an industry-developed framework that the task force strongly believes meets the city's public safety goals. And there'll be kind of a phase-in that I'll describe. So as you may have heard, there are phases for TNCs, the first phase being when the driver turns the app on and that driver is ready to accept a fare but hasn't yet accepted a fare. And the insurance we're recommending there currently in this initial period is contingent liability insurance of $50,000 per person, $100,000 per incident for death or injury, and $25,000 for property damage. The insurance industry is currently in the process and has applications pending at the state before the insurance commissioner for a product that would make what is currently contingent insurance into primary. And our recommendation is, as soon as those products are approved, that category of insurance will become primary.
Mr. Lazar, could you elaborate on the difference between primary and contingent?
Yes. So today, for this period one, where the app is on, but there's no passenger in the vehicle and the driver isn't yet en route to pick up a passenger, if they, but in effect, the vehicle's become a commercial vehicle because it's prepared to accept fares. If that vehicle gets in an accident, the current commercial insurance applicable in that category only applies if their personal auto insurance doesn't kick in. So that's what we mean by, that's what insurance industry means by contingent. So the first recourse is to the personal insurance, the personal vehicle insurance for the driver. And then if that doesn't carry forward, then the contingent coverage kicks in. And then, as I said, when these new products, and our understanding is it could be very soon, we don't know an exact date, but possibly by mid-year, these new products, and the insurance industry, you know, this is a market, and they see revenue opportunities, and so they're actually coming out with new products to serve the industry. And so what will happen is that contingent liability coverage will become primary. So then the personal insurance will have no application once the app is on.
I think it would be also helpful as you go through the three periods to describe who we're trying to protect. Because it changes. Just I know it's implicit, but if you would walk us through, who are we trying to protect through this insurance?
Well, in insurance, I mean, protects, frankly, everybody involved. So there is a both property and humans. So the driver of the TNC vehicle, certainly passengers in the, and right now I'm focusing on the TNC category. So passengers in TNC vehicles and any other parties, be it the pedestrians or drivers or passengers of other vehicles who are involved in a collision.
So in period one, we don't have a passenger.
Correct.
But we do have a driver.
Yes.
We do have pedestrians, and we do have other vehicles.
Correct.
That's really what we're trying to make sure there's adequate insurance to cover any liability that arises in that context.
Yes, in this period one category. Any other questions about that? Thank you, Commissioner. And so the next component has to do with periods two and three, which is when a TNC driver has accepted a fare request, a ride request, and they're en route to, and when they pick up that passenger and during the time the passenger is in that vehicle. And during this period, we're recommending, which is consistent with the framework developed around the country, primary insurance coverage with minimum liability of $1 million for death, injury, or property damage per incident, and $1 million of underinsured motorist, also for death, injury, or property damage.
Is that with a $2 million overall or just a million overall?
$1 million overall.
Per person or per accident?
Per incident.
And
so it's, yes, per incident. Per person and per incident, it's a million combined
so
limits. There's no
people, then the limit is 200,000 each involved in the crash.
I'm sorry?
If there are five people involved in the crash, then the maximum that each could be hoping to get would be 200,000.
We're recommending, again, is the consistent framework of $1 million in coverage. How that gets allocated in a particular situation would depend on that situation.
But what I heard before was that it's $1 million per person, $2 million per incident.
That's for general liability insurance, which is the current requirement in the code. It's a different category of insurance. So it's slip and falls, it's traveling, it's not related to driving the vehicles.
Carry on. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know insurance is, it can be complicated, but there's three, again, just to summarize, there are three categories of insurance that we're making recommendations around, the same three categories that are currently in the code. So the first, again, is the commercial general liability insurance, and we're matching the current code requirements for both TNCs and taxi companies, workers' compensation, which is just whatever state law requires, and then I spoke about the commercial vehicle insurance. Okay? Any other questions? Thank you. So the next issue I'm going to talk about, which I know is very important to a lot of people, including every member of the task force, which has to do with equity and inclusion. And
I'm sorry, I thought you were going to continue on with the insurance part. So what about after the ride has completed and the driver is going back to their home?
So that depends on whether they log out of the app or they remain in service for another call. If they log out of the app, then they're out of the system and they revert to their personal insurance coverage. If they remain in the system and available for another fare, then we revert back to that period one coverage. Once the passenger leaves the vehicle, it reverts back to the period one coverage period.
Okay. And what about when a, first of all, is the app work, is that it hands-free for the app? So if you've got the app on in your car, are you able to, is it voice activated to be able to say I'll accept that ride or not, or does it require cell phone use during the drive?
I don't know the answer to that question.
We did incorporate the city's hands-free policy as an assumption.
In effect, a separate recommendation outside of insurance.
And then what about the problem that if a driver is involved with a personal vehicle, is involved in an accident, that the person's private insurance would be canceled if the insurance company then finds out they've been driving their vehicle for commercial purposes?
So we've heard that concern. We heard that concern during the task force process. I couldn't say that we have sort of a definitive answer from the insurance industry about whether personal insurance would be cancelable. We haven't heard of specific instances in which personal insurance has been canceled. At least none were presented to the task force. And the new products that are currently before the state insurance commissioner would solve that problem.
So why are we proposing to move forward with the pilot project before the insurance is in place.
So our view as a task force, and we were unanimous in this regard, is that the current framework, even with contingent coverage, meets the city's public safety goals, and it's a model that has been applied successfully in a whole bunch of other jurisdictions. So it's not novel to Portland.
So just to make be clear, we're in talking about having contingent coverage during period one from the get-go. And it's my understanding that there has not been incidents elsewhere where the insurance companies have said, even if your app isn't on, the fact that you are sometimes a TNC driver means we won't honor your personal insurance.
We, again, we heard those concerns raised. But nobody has supplied the task force with information that anybody's insurance was canceled for being in participating in the TNC role.
Can I ask, just since we're going to come back to the overall package, but before we move on to the other periods, you said earlier that workers' comp as required by state law. Now, since my understanding is most of the TNCs characterize their workforce as independent contractors, what's the significance of telling us that it's workers' comp as required by state law? We don't have the power to change state law, so you're just saying that that's not changed? Is your point that we're not making any changes to eligibility on workers' comp by any of the changes that you're proposing?
So The answer to your latter question is yes, we are not recommending any changes to current code in this requirement. With regard to the status of drivers, the TNCs operate in a uniformly independent contractor model. The taxi companies here in Portland have varying models. Some are independent contractor models, some are employee models. So those that employ drivers would, to the extent state law requires it, would have to deal with workers' comp insurance. Those that are independent contractors may not have to.
And those that might mischaracterize their employees take their chances.
The evolution of TNCs has raised a host of issues, and many of those issues are being litigated around the country, and I think it's going to take some time for this newly emerging category to sort of find its balance in the law as well as operationally.
Just going back to my previous line of questioning, you've mentioned that the city is named as an additional insured. Does this mean that the city is named on a driver's personal policy?
No, it would be on the commercial the applicable commercial policies. If the personal insurance is applicable, then the taxi or TNC driving isn't implicated. They're using their personal vehicle for personal use, and therefore they're outside of the system.
Yeah, so we recently had a crash of a cab at an intersection. I don't believe the cab was occupied at the time, and of course some of our cabs are personally owned. And so there have been incidences of accidents happening outside of transporting passengers. So I want to make sure that we have adequate coverage. So for instance, the app on having not yet accepted a ride, the limit of 25,000, 50,000, 100,000 seems ridiculously low to me.
Yeah, for injury and death, it's 50, 100, 50,000, 100,000. 25 is for property damage.
Those are not high enough for people who are transporting people, other people in their cars or about to be, I would say. And just to return to my previous comments, I have learned far more than I care to about insurance over the last 28 weeks. And there are companies, private insurance companies, who would cancel your policy if they know that you're driving commercially. And so I'm very nervous about telling Portlanders, go ahead and do this without that understanding that if they get into a crash, they may not have personal coverage, not only for their own car, but perhaps for their family cars that might have been insured as well. So that's been discussed, right, because I've been raising that concern to Commissioner Novick all along. And you just decided to wait and see what the state does?
So I certainly appreciate your concerns. And what I can tell you is, in our collective wisdom as a task force, we believe that these recommendations meet reasonable public safety objectives. And that's why we've put them forth for you. We certainly appreciate your concerns. With regard to the State Insurance Commission, That really is just about moving. And frankly, we're very interested to see that step happen, because we would very much, as a task force, like to see that coverage move to primary.
You know, just as a practical matter, as I listen to this very thoughtful exchange, it occurs to me that what's likely to happen here is the first few times there are accidents involving TNCs in any one of these phases, a competent plaintiff's lawyer is going to sue the driver, is going to sue the TNC, and is going to sue the city as a practical matter. And we're going to sort this out through a litigation process, because a competent lawyer is going to sue everybody that might have any potential liability, and we're going to figure out what the courts deem to be appropriate. I do share some concern about, there are some things that I think we can take a little bit of a chance on through a pilot period. I'm not sure insurance is an area we want to take the greatest area of risk, so that's just something to come back to in later staff discussions.
Okay. Great, thank you. Appreciate the dialogue. So moving on then to equity and inclusion, and again, a very important issue for the task force, and I know it's important to a lot of people in this community. And I just want to state our goal as a task force is ultimately to achieve parity in both accessible and not accessible private for hire transportation in the city. I want to first sort of frame the current state of the universe before sharing our recommendations. Currently, in terms of supply, there is in the code a requirement that taxi companies have 20% of their fleet allocated as wheelchair accessible. My understanding is only one of the companies currently meets that requirement. In terms of service levels,
when was that requirement adopted?
Years ago, as far as we know. I don't know the exact date, but
20% ceiling.
It's long been in the code, is our understanding. One of the things that occurred to us, and probably occurred to you, as a commission or city council, is that that's not a service requirement. It's simply a supply requirement. And so, as you'll see in our recommendations, we'd like to move toward a service-based approach as opposed to a supply definition approach that doesn't really bear on services. In any event, service levels currently are not defined or addressed in the current regulations. In terms of demand for accessible transportation, there's no meaningful historical data on level of demand. I have one anecdotal data point. One of the taxi companies reported to me in a meeting that they believed, and this isn't verified data, that 3 to 5% of their total call volume was for accessible transportation. We got input on the task force that suggests reasonable levels of wheelchair accessible vehicle service are not consistently being provided throughout the city. So that's our view of the current state. With that in mind, we make the following recommendations. We recommend that both taxi and TNC companies provide citywide wheelchair accessible vehicle transportation services, either through their own vehicles or through a city an agreement with a city-approved provider. We recommend that both taxi and TNC companies with apps make provision on those apps for a rider to make requests for wheelchair-accessible vehicles. We recommend that taxi companies, we're recommending to reduce that 10% fleet, the 20% fleet requirement to 10%. To sort of match the current state and with the recognition that it's not a service-based standard. We're recommending that both taxi and TNC companies report both, for the taxi companies, that they report historical data, 2 years of historical data, and that both categories of companies, beginning with this 120-day period, report ongoing requests for service, both accessible and non-accessible, including response time data, so that that can inform the task force tasks going forward, its work going forward. And we're recommending that a fee be assessed against TNC companies only for data collection, management, and analysis during this 120-day period. That's phase one. In phase two, to give you a preview, I can tell you that the task force and staff we'll be collecting and analyzing this data, and we'll be using that data to evaluate a variety of models that can be applied to accessible transportation in the city. You can expect a comprehensive set of recommendations from us at the during the phase two meeting that we'll have, And I want to give you my personal assurance, which I shared with Sue Stahl, that I will do everything I can on the task force, and I know other members share this view, to solve this problem in this city.
I just wanted to add something, which is that the current code provides an alternative to the 20% requirement. It says that companies that participate in the Portland Accessible Cab Association Agreement are required to have only 10% of their fleet wheelchair accessible. Taxi companies that participate in that agreement are required to provide wheelchair accessible taxi service within a reasonable time. It's a rebuttable presumption that any time beyond 30 minutes is unreasonable. It's my understanding that there are no participants in the Portland Accessible Cab Association Agreement, that all of the companies have chosen to opt for the 20% option. But there is an existing code, an option similar to what you're describing for the pilot.
Thank you for that clarification. And again, just to finish my comments, and certainly happy to answer any questions, the goal from our perspective on the task force is to pursue this in a data-driven way and to analyze a variety of models that can meet this need. Thank you.
So can I ask you about the city-approved provider component and the apps with the option to declare that you have a disability and need an accommodation. Is it your recommendation that those be in place prior to the 120-day period?
As part of the 120-day period. In other words,
is your recommendation that we have this, that we have these agreements to have city-approved providers if you don't provide it, and that the apps be updated and that be done prior to the beginning of the 120-day period?
Yes, it's a condition of permitting.
And is the intent to have the 10% apply to the transportation network companies, too?
It does not. It applies only to the cab companies.
So what's the requirement for the transportation networks in the pilot?
That they can choose to have an accessible fleet and serve this need in that way, or they can contract with a city-approved provider to meet the need, which means their app has to have the ability to make a request for accessible transportation, and they have to have a mechanism to immediately communicate that request to their contract partner to serve that need.
So that might help for folks who are having trouble getting through to dispatch, to getting the vehicle dispatched, but it would decrease the overall number of vehicles. Because the percentage of vehicles would then decrease if none of the TNCs have to be accessible, and we're decreasing the number that the taxi cabs have to be accessible, which, remember, we just had a lot more permits approved, so the taxi companies were planning to increase their numbers. We're not, I mean, are there other companies other than the taxi companies who are providing accessible rides?
Our understanding is that there are, and I think staff can probably address that better than I can.
Thank you.
And just to close the loop on a related issue, how do we ensure that if a TNC opts out and enters into a city-approved contract with a third-party provider to provide that service, how do we ensure that the customer is not charged a premium for a basic service?
We address that in the fee component of our recommendations, which is coming up.
So there's, just as a preview, there is no additional fee that can be charged just providing the basic service to someone who's disabled?
Correct. We're not suggesting there should be that accessible transportation should riders would need to pay a premium for that service. They should not.
But there is a provision for surge pricing and other kinds of things. So at least with this category, the TNCs would not be able to charge a premium to provide a basic service.
We did not address that question.
We did not address that specifically.
I think we're going to have to make absolutely clear that it is on the same terms and conditions, regardless of what additional administrative costs the TNC incurs in opting out and contracting. I think that would be fundamental, that we have to offer at the same price. So we'll come back to that with staff.
So just so we're clear, what you're suggesting is that surge pricing would not be permitted for wheelchair accessible rides.
No premium pricing other than what is applied uniformly in the marketplace for someone who seeks a basic service who happens to be disabled. I mean, that would very much undercut, I think, the equity argument if someone was allowed to pass that cost on.
Thank you for raising that question. It's a very good one. That's my, those are my comments. Thank you.
Okay. That might be a good transition since we're talking about rates to have Ms. Ansari.
Sure. So good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners, Rehana Ansari with the Portland Business Alliance. Thank you for the opportunity to serve on the task force. I'm going to continue with regulations that vary, beginning with fare rates and pricing. For both TNCs and taxis, we're recommending that there be fare transparency and the distribution of either hard copy or electronic receipts. For TNCs, we recommend no fare regulation and allow for dynamic fare pricing, with the exception being that in periods of or in a state of emergency, the PBOT director can send out an alert that would suspend dynamic fare pricing.
Can we be clear that when we're talking about an emergency, we're talking about a Blazers game occurring at the same time as a Timbers game? We're talking about any events at City Hall that bring more than 200 people to the chambers. I mean, we have a very elastic definition, I hope.
Or your birthday party.
Well, that.
Right. An earthquake, a severe natural disaster.
Big snowstorm.
Yeah, big snowstorm.
That would be hard for Portlanders to cope with. So,
and the PBOT, under your rules, the PBOT director gets to make that call.
Correct.
Okay.
And for taxis, we recommend that current fare regulations maintain. The reason being is that we, as a task force, felt that these are different models, and we'd like to test how consumers respond to the models in the first 120-day period.
May I just ask about that? I mean,
sure.
Did somebody raise the concern that if the taxi cabs are subject to price regulation, the TNCs aren't, then the TNCs will undercut what the taxi cabs charge during sort of slow periods and make up for that by surge pricing and have a competitive advantage because they'd be able to undercut the taxi cabs' prices but because they can offset it by surge pricing?
Do you have a response to that? I don't.
I think we don't know what is going to happen with pricing in the marketplace because it's thus far it's been highly regulated. Data from other cities has been mixed on that topic. Frankly, we went a bit round and round on the question of whether to eliminate fare regulation for the taxi side, and we heard from staff there were some administrative concerns around that and what would happen after the 120 days if it changed back. So I can't say that we have a strong view on this particular topic. Ultimately, this is what we recommended.
And I appreciate that. First of all, I think the task force has done an amazing job in a very short period of time, and my hat's off to you for the quality of the work. But let's go back to a values proposition you started with about a level playing field, and it following up on what Commissioner Novick just asked, it does strike me at least that we are potentially creating a separate but unequal system if we regulate, if we allow someone to set the price and another is regulated. And I understand you struggle with that, and I'm not here to pick a fight over that. We're here actually to better understand your thinking and to understand what our options are. But it does at least on the surface seem like it's not a level playing field. And I'm gonna need some help to understand reasonable predictions about what's likely to happen and why the same ground rules don't apply to both sides.
So if I may just offer a brief comment on that, I think you've raised a legitimate concern that we wrestled with. Frankly, the question is this an area that government should regulate, or is this an area where the free market should determine pricing, leaving aside accessibility? Frankly, my personal view is that there's no data upon which the government, in this case the City of Portland, could rationally determine what pricing ought to be in the market unless you understand cost structures and that sort of thing. And so, again, my personal view is that it probably makes the most sense not to regulate in either category. And again, we struggled with this, and ultimately this is what we recommended, but certainly share your concerns.
Well, while we're on this same subject, and maybe you were going to mention this, but the task force is recommending the structure that we've just talked about. I am assuming, and our city attorney can either nod or talk about this later, but I'm assuming that if we choose not to regulate some aspect of prices now, we're not, during the pilot project phase, we are not foreclosing the option of regulating those rates later.
Correct. Right?
We still have the authority that we have. We regulate private for hire transportation, new kinds and old kinds. And if we don't for now regulate rates, that doesn't mean we can't regulate them later, right?
Correct.
We're all working on the same assumption. Okay.
So, Mr. Mayor, the concern, though, that I would have, Charlie, on that is that it begins, at least to me, to feel like you've got a restaurant next to a restaurant, and one of them has a certain level of administrative requirements or regulatory burdens, the other one doesn't, and we're saying one can charge what they want, the other one couldn't, and we're saying at the end of 120 days, we'll see potentially how much damage we've done. And the problem is we might actually put someone out of business.
Right, I get it.
And that's hard to put the genie back in the bottle. And I just want to tread lightly on that. And I hope we can make a rational forecast as to the unintended consequences.
No, I get that. I just wanted to make sure on legal ground that, that nothing that if we accept the task force's recommendations, we're not foreclosing any options for the council. That doesn't mean that we want to accept them as they are today.
Right.
But I get it.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Fish, just for the record, I share your concern. I am not enamored of the idea of having price regulation for some actors but not others.
Right. Thank you. So continuing with permit fees, for TNCs, we recommend applying a flat fee per company based on cost recovery. And our understanding is that city staff are working on estimating what the cost recovery would be. For taxis, we recommend continuing to apply the existing fee structure and maintaining a moratorium on fee increases of the kiddies.
And the kiddie is?
Is the set fee that cab companies collect from their drivers to cover for overhead. In phase two, we recommend the potential for a tiered fee structure based on the number of vehicles per company, and that would be for both TNCs and taxis. And the idea is that this would allow entry for smaller companies into the marketplace. For vehicle signage notices, we recommend for both TNCs.
Excuse me, before you go
yes.
on. Going back to fees, so my understanding is that the TNC drivers, do they have to pay a permit fee?
Our recommendation is that for the TNCs, it would be a company permit fee.
So the cab drivers have to pay between $225 and $600 for a new or renewed license. So what happens to a cab driver whose license comes up for renewal during this 120-day period?
Mm-hmm. My understanding, and this is what I've heard from city staff, is that most of the drivers pay for their own permit fee. And, you know, this is something that we would be open to exploring in phase two.
But then again, there's an inequity if TNC drivers don't have to pay for their permit and the cab drivers do. That doesn't seem fair. Then my other question is about taxes. So I understand that in other jurisdictions there's a flat fee for the TNC companies, but we charge business license fees for current taxi cabs. So did you look into the fiscal impacts of the potential flat fee? And one of the things that I was interested in the Airbnb requirements was that we were going to get over $1 million in lodging taxes. Are we looking to get the same level of taxes and income taxes on TNCs versus taxi cabs and drivers?
My understanding is that this would be cost recovery only, and that this would not be a revenue generator for the city. And
fees, not the taxes.
Yeah, but the challenge is that the business license tax only kicks in when your income is $50,000 or more, which few Uber drivers are going to be individually earning $50,000 or more, although the company earns billions. So I think for us colleagues, there's a discussion to be had about a potential decrease in business license tax from the cab companies if a slice of the market is taken off to a non-taxable entity.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner, my assumption has been that The TNCs are doing business in the city, and therefore they are subject to the business license tax.
Right, me too.
TNCs themselves.
But that would be, Steve, we'd only be able to tax them on the basis of their 20% fee they charge each driver. That would, isn't that the only thing we can tax them on?
Yes, but similarly, we tax